Once again, from the IAL podcast studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Show, featuring Inside Lacrosse and Big Ten Network analyst and my Homewood homeboy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Dix, welcome to another week.
Hello.
On the D-Fly and Dixie Show. Dix, when you were a little kid, did you ever imagine that Catonsville, Maryland, your hometown, would be Upset City? That Catonsville, pretty old historic Catonsville.
Yep.
On the banks of the
Patapsco
River?
Patapsco River.
Would be the
home to the 4th of July parade to end all parades up and down Frederick Road.
Home of Marshmallow Donuts.
The Catonsville
Bill's
Bakery.
Music House.
Bill's Music House. Jennings Cafe. They were doing backflips at Jennings this past Friday night.
It is the home of the upset makers.
It is.
And after taking down the UVA basketball team in the greatest upset in the history of the NCAA basketball tournament, UMBC Retrievers do it again. They take down the Dane Train.
The Dane Train gets derailed.
Right off the tracks.
In Catonsville. Yeah.
Amazing. So we have a new number one this week, for sure, in the Maverick Media Poll. And that started off a wonderful weekend.
Are you going to be like Casey Kasem and count them back from number 10 to number one? I mean, that's your teaser. You're not going to name the new number one.
We used to do that. But the last year, because there was a new number one just about every week.
That's true.
But this week, this year it's pretty much the same teams each week. So,
but the team,
the more interesting is the sort of the back half of the.
Yeah, the team at number one though, first time they've been number one all year. The only other two number ones that we've had up to this point are Albany and Duke.
Correct. You are correct.
Anyway, you know I know that because I looked at the Maverick Media Poll yesterday, and off to the right, it'll say weekly number ones, with that team's name and their logo, and it's very fancy.
Yeah, I think I have a copy of that right here.
There you go.
Albany had a nice run of 6 weeks in the top.
They were 6 weeks at the top spot.
Followed by Duke was preseason number one and then held it down for a couple more weeks.
Right.
And then Albany's 6 week run, and now we have the Terps at number one. We'll get to the Maverick Media Poll, but
Do you ever follow the Billboard Top 40 anymore? I used to listen to that like religion when I was a kid. And the Baltimore.
Oh, yeah, everybody.
Casey Kasem.
That's how you had to get your music. You listen to the radio and you just wait it for. I try to explain this to my kids when they're like, play this song again, play this song
again. Oh, yeah.
And you're like, you know, I used to have to wait to listen to. I'd have to wait for it to come on the radio and you didn't know when it was going to come on. But then some shows would have like either a once a week top 40 countdown or I remember Power 99 FM
in
Philadelphia.
Okay.
So I grew, you know, a little boy in Newark, Delaware. They'd have the top nine at nine. Mm-hmm. Every night, the top nine rap songs. And I would wait to hear like UTFO or
Roxanne.
Yeah, exactly.
We had the same thing in Baltimore. It was B104. And it was called Bed Check with Kid Curry. And I used to, but the song that I loved was I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis and the News. And my father in particular used to get pissed when I listened to that song.
That's not even in my top 10 Huey Lewis songs.
But it was a good, when it first came out, it was cool. And then my dad's like, you turn that off.
Drug?
They're talking about drugs. I'm like, no. Drug is like, even then I knew like drug was a metaphor for love. But he's like, I don't want you listening to songs about drugs and stuff like that. So that was pretty funny. But American Top 40, AT40, used to be on every Sunday morning. And that thing would run from like 9 a.m. to like 1 p.m. because they'd only play two songs at a time. Then you'd have all the commercials. And then you'd always have, this is a long-distance dedication. Dan Flynn writes, Dear Casey, recently we lost a member of our family. Snuggles was a... Actually, I think that's an outtake that Howard Stern plays when he freaks out because Snuggles ends up being a dog, and then they have him off air freaking out. He's like, how am I supposed to do a dedication for a dead beeping dog? He's like, this job sucks.
I have heard that before.
It's going nuts. So now I have...
which is a perfect example of a guy who, Ron Burgundy,
mm-hmm.
who just... You put something in front of him, the guy just sits down and reads it. There's no prep.
Yeah.
He just comes right in and he's like, what, this is for a dog?
Yeah. Yeah. Casey Kasem was very discerning. He used to get very upset at the long distance dedications. But now, so I've got Sirius Satellite Radio And one of my go-to stations is the 80s on 8, and it's the old original MTVJs that are on there.
Alan Jackson.
Mark Goodman.
Quinn.
No, hold on. It's Martha Quinn.
Martha Quinn.
Nita Blackwood. Mark Goodman. And who's the
Triple blonde? Triple J, J.J. Jackson.
Yeah, he's dead. He died. Yeah, J.J.'s gone. Who's the other one? Alan Goodman?
Alan Goodman.
Is that it? He's good. I think that's his.
Yeah, he was the blonde guy.
So when they do the Big 40 countdown, this date in 1985, that's done in an hour because they just run the songs through. And you're like, man, Casey Kasem could have only been on the, but you know, I guess he had to, have all the sponsors and all the commercials.
Yeah, there's a lot of commercials. Kind of
thing. But, I mean, I used to listen to AT40.
Everybody listened to that.
I used to remember, Huey Lewis in the News, waiting to hear that one. UTFO, as you mentioned. I love when Roxanne came out. I used to listen to the Fat Boys like it was my job when I was in grade school. Can You Feel It? Stick'em. And the and every week it was the, oh man, did you hear the human beatbox died? No, you're kidding. And I think
he ate a Pop Rocks.
Pop Rocks and drank a Coke, or you know, he ate too much at the Ponderosa buffet or Sizzler buffet or something like that. So anyway,
good stuff. Congratulations UMBC for being in Catonsville, Maryland, for being Upset City. I think we have a new shirt that you can also get that says Upset City. It's pretty cool.
Did you see what their social media did? They then challenged Alabama football after that.
That's awesome.
And I was talking to Ed Lee from the Baltimore Sun yesterday, and we were discussing this very thing. And I told him, I said, if you're number one in any sport and you have to play UMBC on a Friday night, look out, because the Virginia basketball upset was a Friday night.
That's right.
And then this game where UMBC beat Albany, that game was moved from Saturday to Friday because they were afraid of some weather that was being forecasted, which turned out to be absolutely nothing. But, wow, what a great win for the Retrievers.
Yeah, and Dan Ayburn was there, and he said they played they didn't look like an underdog or a team that was going for a big upset. They held their own. They played very well. Albany was without a couple of star players.
The biggest star of which?
Yeah.
Connor Fields.
And Justin Ray. But regardless, the number one team in the country should have gone down there and taken care of business. I think it was their first America East loss since 2012, which is a remarkable run through the conference.
Wow.
For the Great Danes. We'll see how they react to this. They have a bye week.
UMBC
was...
What do you
think practice is going to be like?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a refocus. And much like Denver, when they play that great out-of-conference schedule, then you get to the Big East, which hasn't been top to bottom all that strong the last couple of years. Now, this year, Villanova's better. Georgetown's better. Marquette's been to the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row. But they typically struggle in the regular season. They get their bid by beating Denver in the Big East tournament. So, you know, this could be a nice reset for the Great Danes, to a good teaching moment for Scott Maher to be like, look, any given day, you know, you guys just went down to UMBC, a team that was 2-7, 2-7, and you lost to UMBC. And this is a Retriever team that's been decimated by injury. There was another injury, and he played. Their best defenseman, John Tornabene, played, but he was questionable going into that game. I think this just speaks to how much Connor Fields means to this team, as well as Justin Ray. As great as DeHogan Anacok is, he's not ready for prime time. He's not ready to run that offense this year. And and that defense for Albany looked very pedestrian, a defense that I think probably going into that game might be considered the best defensive unit in the country when you consider J.D. Colarusso. I think he's the first-team All-American at this point in the season, and Stone Sims is a really good defender, and they got great shorties in the Bergmaster brothers, and Kyle McClancy plays up and down and does a great job. Huge win for UMBC.
Yeah, huge win for them. So you mentioned the weather being a factor out here on the East Coast. A lot of games that were scheduled for Saturday got moved to Friday. Another one that was a eye-opening result was Denver absolutely laying the wood to Villanova in Philadelphia on Friday night. It was 18-5 at halftime. Denver dominated every aspect of the game and then just cruised to a 22-6 win. Ethan Walker had 8 goals. Trevor Baptiste, 27-30 at the faceoff dot. What a win for Denver, proving a point, I believe.
This is a week off of Denver only scoring 6 goals, and everybody made note that the fact that that was the lowest goal-scoring output since Bill Tierney took over the Pioneers. And a lot of people, myself included, have said this is not the same Denver team offensively that we've seen the last couple of years. Yeah, they have Trevor Baptiste. Yes, they're going to get a ton of extra possessions on the whole. Yes, they've got great ball movement, but man, to put 18 up on Villanova,
in the first half,
considered to be your stiffest competition in the Big East, and rightly so. Villanova owns wins over Yale, Penn State. They played Maryland really, really tough. They beat Penn too, right? Villanova's beaten Penn. Yeah, I think they did, because Penn's like 5-6 now. Penn's lost quite a few games, but in any event, I mean, wow, it was a shellacking. It was a fleecing of the highest order.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And one of the storylines coming out of it was a palpable sense of disrespect that the Denver players and coaching staff were feeling. I'm sure Coach T had them extremely motivated to go in there, even changing their travel plans, playing a day early, going cross country. They certainly got the attention of national media only one day after our first bracketology came out, and they were left out. They had Villanova.
Out of the tournament?
They were left out of the tournament. We had Villanova.
Whoa. Yeah.
We had Villanova as the predicted winner of the
Big East,
because at the time, I think their record sort of played that out.
And will that change this week?
I believe so. I believe so. But Denver, their RPI wasn't that great because they didn't have any kind of significant wins. I mean, they've beaten Ohio State, who has a losing record. They beat North Carolina, who's 6-6. They lost on the road to Duke. So they didn't have any significant wins, you know, top five wins, top 10 wins. So they have one now. And I think that they have regained the respect, if they'd ever lost it, if that is even such a thing, of the national pundits.
I tell you, so it's never easy to move a game when a game's scheduled for Saturday and you want to move it to Friday because of the weather. And I did, and it was true, the weather on Saturday proved to be a non-issue. But I tell you what, Friday was a much nicer day than Saturday. I think the temperatures on Friday got up into the mid to high 60s, and they really hadn't dissipated by evening time. Saturday morning was a totally different story, and you saw it at the Hopkins Ohio State game. It was a pretty raw day.
Yeah.
So even though those teams had to move their games up, change travel plans, better safe than sorry, Friday actually turned out to be a much nicer weather day than Saturday, even without the 8 inches of snow that we were forecasted to receive earlier that week.
So I want to get your Tuesday takeaways on a couple other games. So a big Patriot League game, Loyola got a 16-10 win at Lehigh. Patrick Spencer, 4 goals, 3 assists. No surprise there that he would play well in a big game.
Yeah.
Faceoff man Bailey Savio had maybe his best day ever in a Greyhound uniform, winning 17 of 25 faceoffs.
And that game was over pretty early. I forget the halftime score. I don't have the box score right in front of me, but it may have been like 9-2, 9-3. It was a dominant effort from Loyola from start to finish. And Lehigh's never beaten Loyola. And you know, when we talk about Penn State, Maryland later, that's another situation where Penn State, again, depends on what record you're looking at. Penn State claims to have beaten Maryland twice in that series, but the latest wins were in the 1920s. There's a huge mental component to that, and Loyola jumped on them early and dominated possession time, won some faceoffs. I watched that game. It was Evan Washburn and Dave Ryan were calling that game for CBS. I watched part of that game, and it was just absolutely dominant, the way that the Greyhounds were possessing the ball and executing offensively against a pretty good defensive team in Lehigh. So when a team has not had success against you and you go out and you just smack them right in the mouth and you keep hitting them, that wears on you, and I think they wore Lehigh out in that. Interesting Patriot League race right now. One loss each, I believe, for Navy, Bucknell, and Loyola. Lehigh's right on their heels. BU beat Army, and now the Black Knights are 2-4, believe it or not, in the Patriot League, which is crazy when you think about coming into the season. They were a lot of people's dark horses right on the outside of the top 10 to make a run, not just at a Patriot League championship, but also an NCAA tournament berth. And they've got a huge game this weekend against Navy.
All right, let's go to the game that you mentioned a second ago that you called on Sunday night. Number 2 Maryland went into State College and escaped with a 13-12 win. Terps faced their first halftime deficit of the season, but made a nice run in the second half. Connor Kelly had 6 goals. Logan Wisnowskis had 3 goals, especially 2 key goals.
Two of the snappy variety in the fourth quarter. Yeah,
back-to-back goals and a key run for them. And they get that win. What's that mean for Maryland, and what's it mean for Penn State moving forward?
Well, there's a couple of things. First and foremost, Sunday Night Lacrosse on Big Ten Network just continues to wow and impress. It is must-watch TV, and it's just so much fun to call those games. Joby and I had the call. It was extremely cold. It was very cold. It was probably game temperature at face-off was 35 degrees, with the old feels like 28 with the wind chill. And by the time we got done, I'm sure it was probably closer to the teens than it was into the 20s. But we're on a little platform right at Panzer Stadium at Penn State. Their press box is under construction. Their permanent bleachers on the far side of the field were under construction. So the fans were all on the same side as us, and we were on this little platform right around midfield. And let me tell you, the atmosphere there was, the students were on point. There were a ton of students there. They were very vocal. It was tough for us to shoot it because you can't put a camera across the field. There's no place to put a camera because of all the construction. But I thought our guys did a really good job of taking some end zone shots and showing the fans as they lined the field. Also, after goals, we got some fan shots as well. People love Joe B. We had a couple youngsters, college students, come up and ask to have their pictures taken with Joe B. Big hockey fans, big Capital fans. I had a gentleman come up after the game who was rather large gentleman, had a Penn State jacket on, and was I could feel him looking at me, but we were getting ready for our post game hit. And when you have situations like that, it can go a variety of different ways, especially when they're basically right in front of you. So I looked up, and the gentleman was like shaking his head, and he's like, "Irish lasagna? Really? Irish lasagna?" And it took me a minute, and I was like, "Oh yeah." I was like, "Oh no. I was like, "Look, I'm not a big Italian food guy." I was like, "It was really, really good. It was absolutely delicious." And he was like, I've never heard of Irish lasagna. Nobody ever makes Irish lasagna." But he was cool about it. He was good natured about it.
Challenging my sister's cred.
I was just having a little bit of fun. Then he finished it up with, "I really enjoy your podcast. Great work. Great job." Oh, so the guy's nice. He's a fan, he's a listener. But I think this gentleman may have some Italian blood running through his veins. But it was really funny. It was pretty cool.
All right, so this is all I got, though. But my mother grew up in an Italian neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
in Little Italy in Wilmington, Delaware.
Hell's Kitchen?
Which isn't Little Italy, it's some other
Little
cities.
Italy, Wilmington, Delaware?
Hey,
is it legit?
If you're from Wilmington, Delaware, you know where Little Italy
really?
Is.
Really?
It is legit. And she knows how to make a good lasagna, or knew how to make a good lasagna.
If you're not from Little Italy, Wilmington, Delaware, you won't understand Little Italy, Wilmington, Delaware. So don't even bother coming to Little Italy.
A couple
Wilmington,
blocks
Delaware.
From St. Anthony's Church and School, right, where they have a giant St. Anthony's Italian Festival every year, which is a famous thing in Wilmington. And she was my mother was a very good cook.
What was your mom's maiden name?
Bennett.
Oh, okay.
That's why I like my kid's name, Bennett.
Oh, yeah, sure. But not in a super Italian name.
No, Bennett. No. There's not a lot of Italian blood in that.
It's not like a DiCincenzo or, no.
But she knew how to cook, and she was very good at making lasagna. My sister married into a very Italian family, the Gianfracaros.
From
North Jersey.
Okay.
And
the North Jersey Gianfracaros.
And taking my mother's influence, as well as her mother-in-law's influence in the mm-hmm. family, my sister's become an extremely good cook of especially Italian food.
Well, kidding.
And
I can vouch for the lasagna.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, where's the...
The product speaks for itself.
Where's
it's all gone, man.
Where's
it's all gone.
Unbelievable.
She can make more. That's what she does.
Crunch all you want. We'll make more. The old Doritos commercial with Jay.
But Ryan. I will vouch for my sister's cred. And if you tried it, you know it's good.
Okay.
You know it's good.
It was delicious. It was really, really good. You may have to give me a slice next time I go up to Penn State. I go back to Penn State late April. And if this gentleman's there.
What is she making lasagna for everyone in the... Maybe she should open a restaurant.
Lasagna for the lacrosse world.
Tracy, you got to open a restaurant. That's your new
thing. She can call it... I hate the word lax, by the way. I've always hated the word lax.
Laxagna.
Exactly. Like lax lasagna, lasagna lax, but, but it could be like lacrosse lasagna. LL. Give me an LL. Chris Macon would order it. Give me an LL, Dex. Extra ricotta. By the way, man, we got a lot of positive feedback on the Chris Macon Sky Whammy story.
Yeah, we did.
And Mako lives in, we connected through Facebook. He lives in Texas, and some people have recommended having him as a guest on the podcast. So maybe like last year, we did a special off-season.
Yeah, in the fall.
With Jerry Smith at PJs and Dick Adele. Maybe we can have Mako as one of our special guests.
Oh, I'd love it.
Telling some of his tales.
He's got some great stories to tell, right. I'm sure. So let's get back to the game. Let's talk about that Penn State-Maryland game. What's it mean for each team coming out of that?
Well, another big, huge win for the Terps, and they keep getting it done. As you mentioned, halftime deficit. Penn State, man, they played their hearts out. They really did. Impressed. Again, Joe and I called the game basically from field level, where we were 10 yards from the sideline. So you saw the physicality and the speed and the intensity of this game. I love the fact that Penn State just constantly moves on offense. They don't have really a superstar, so they share the ball extremely well, get the ball to each other in good spots. You know, defensively, they're very athletic. I think they're disciplined and improved. They're much improved from the beginning of the year. Colby Kinese a little inconsistent in goal. 16 saves against Ohio State. He does cheat down low a little bit, and I think Maryland took advantage of him dipping a couple of times. But then again, Connor Kelly was shooting. I mean, the guy was like shooting from the Bryce Jordan Center and sticking it. He had such an impressive night. Maryland, again, they just find ways to win, and they did it again with a different faceoff man. Justin Shockey was struggling against Gerard Arceri, and they brought in Austin Henningsen, and Henningsen started to calm down a little bit, but I thought Arceri was dominant throughout the night. And there's another piece of that. So Arceri won a faceoff late in the game, went to play it after he had picked it up, went to pass it, then he just went down with a non-contact injury. So his status is unclear at this point. I don't want to speculate on what it could be. I have heard a couple of things of what it could be. But hopefully he's back on the field sooner than later. And
would you expect him to play this week?
I think it's... I don't know. I really don't know. So when you have that mental mountain that you've never beaten Maryland and you've lost to Maryland 4 times in the last 2 years, 5 times in the last 3 years, you're in a nip-and-tuck game with them where every inch of the field is being contested, and now you lose your face-off, man. Like, I think that was a big blow to the Penn State psyche, I think, on the outside looking in.
Well, watching the game on TV, they had a chance to really cut the lead late in the game, and there was a pivotal face-off that Arceri's backup just couldn't pick up.
Yeah,
and
he couldn't pick up the ground ball. The other thing I will say is Maryland does not beat itself, and if you give them an opening, they'll make you pay. So I thought Penn State, when the game, I believe it was tied or they were down by one, took a questionable shot that was right into the stick of Dan Morris, and they went the other way. And I think that may have been the second of the two Wisnowskis transition goals. And they scored. And that's, man, you're like, you just have to be so patient against that Maryland defense. And Dan Morris played a great fourth quarter. He came up with 3 or 4 critical saves. That one was relatively easy. It was kind of right in his breadbasket. Obviously wasn't the placement that the Penn State shooter wanted. But they just don't beat themselves. Maryland does not beat themselves.
What is the health status of Grant Amet for Penn State?
I saw him in a boot. In street clothes on Sunday, so he's not suiting up. I don't think he's practicing.
Could he redshirt?
I think he could. He hasn't played a minute this year,
right?
I guess
he will. I mean, would you bring him back for two games?
I wouldn't.
Like the Big Ten tournament?
I wouldn't. I would not. I think he. I don't know what his academic situation is. I don't know what his personal situation is. I only know his lacrosse situation, which is he's a junior. And he hasn't played a minute of regular season lacrosse this year. I don't know what equation the NCAA uses these days to determine eligibility when you take into account fall ball and any preseason scrimmages, because he was hurt, I believe.
He hasn't played in any games.
Yeah, he was hurt in preparation for the season opener. So, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't redshirt him. But they're not sharing any information on his
It's
health.
Something to keep a lookout for.
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right, Dix, let's move on to a couple other games. Just get your thoughts on these. A game that my sister was at was the Duke-Notre Dame game.
Now, where does she live?
She lives in Pennsylvania, but she was out there visiting her son, who plays at Culver Academy.
Oh, okay.
That's Mike G.
Nice.
He is the starting goalie for the number one team in the nation, the Culver Eagles.
Number one high school.
Yeah, he plays for the Culver prep team.
Yeah.
And they played at Notre Dame before that game, and then she was staying to see Notre Dame play Duke.
Good crowd.
Yeah.
Real good crowd on hand. Anisha and Kark had that game.
8-2 win for Duke. No offense from Notre Dame.
Yeah, nothing.
None.
Brendan Gleason still out, and then Brian Costabile, their best midfielder, did not play in that game.
But do we know why?
No. At the time of the game, there was no explanation given, none shared, none known. And so they were down 4-2 at half and didn't score in the entire second half. So that is a team right now reeling big time on the offensive end. I don't care how good their defense is. And their defense is still very, very good. I don't think they're as dominant as they have been in years past because the goalie situation isn't as strong. I think that position will develop over time. But Notre Dame right now just has zero offense. And I thought Duke just did a really good job of playing within themselves, managing the game, managing Notre Dame, and getting out there with a dominant victory for the Blue Devils. But there's trouble in South Bend.
Yeah, for sure. In the Ivy League, we found out a little bit more about Cornell. They hosted Harvard and got a 15-11 win in another edition of the Jeff Teat Show. 4 goals, 8 assists, 12 points. They had more points on the day than goals scored by Harvard. That kid's phenomenal.
He really is. He's raised his game as a sophomore, and he's a hard cover. He's a known with 5 stars and 6 asterisks and circled 8 times on any scouting report, and he still continues to be dominant. 15-11, you know, a lot of these games. This weekend was overall competitive in the Ivy League. Brown knocked off Penn by a goal or two. They had a huge halftime lead. The Quakers battled back. Another nice win for Cornell, and they continue just to get the job done. And hats off to Peter Milliman and his Big Red. They're playing some good lacrosse.
Last week you covered the Rutgers-Hopkins game. Rutgers loses a heartbreaker. We were wondering how they might bounce back, and boy, did they lay it on Michigan this week. They get a 16-8 win, but they were winning 12-0 in this game. Michigan was 0-for-18 shooting in the first half. Max Edelman had a great game and goal. He had 10 saves in the first half for Rutgers, and Kieran Mullen had 8 goals. But, man, what a bounce-back game for the Scarlet Knights.
It was a game that started slowly. I watched a little bit of it before I had to head out myself to Penn State. But it was like a little bit of a ding-dong game early in the contest.
What do you mean by that?
Just like kind of back and forth and nobody really establishing any type of superiority, any type of control of the game. Then all of a sudden, Rutgers started scoring and then scoring and scoring and scoring. And it was just, I mean, it was like a mismatch after a bit. There was a play in the game where Chad Tolliver, short stick DMT for Rutgers, got a push. And then as the play was winding down, a Michigan guy late hit or illegal body checked a Rutgers player. You know, again, like there's like little mental mistakes that Michigan makes seems to really come back and haunt them in a big way. And we saw that against Maryland with the ill-advised shot clock violation where the ball ended up near midfield and Maryland picked it up, went down and scored. But how about Kieran Mullins? What do you have, 8 goals?
Eight goals.
That's 16 goals in 2 games over the last 2 years against Michigan. So if Kieran Mullins played Michigan, you know, more than once a year.
Giving it to Arden.
You know, yeah, he might win the, you know, all Big Ten. He might be an All-American and win the TUI. So great job by Mullins. And I thought that Rutgers played, that they really executed fantastic. And I love their little freshman, Ryan Gallagher. He's something special and a handful to match up with.
Let's give a little bit of love to one of our sponsors, Trimino. Trimino protein infused water has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your workout, and it tastes great. It comes in 7 delicious flavors, including 3 new flavors, citrus, orchard, and raspberry limeade. You can grab them at CVS or a local retailer. You can always get them online at Amazon.com. Trimino increases energy and endurance and even curbs your appetite so you can play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good. All right, let's look at that Maverick Media Poll, Dix.
Go ahead.
We have a new number one, as we mentioned before.
Drum roll.
Navy joins the top 20 this week.
Navy's not the new number one.
No, but they're in the top 20 for
the first time. I just said drum roll for the new number one, and you went Navy. Well, okay. Navy's in my top 20. I think I put them around 17, 18.
The biggest mover is Villanova, which drops six spots.
Villanova with the drop.
From 7 to number 13. That's nice. Nice.
You like that?
Ad rock, I believe.
Right. There you go.
So the new Maverick Media poll, number one is Maryland. Two, Albany.
Mm-hmm.
Three, Denver. After their convincing win, Hopkins continues its slow climb. Blue Jays won 7 in a row. They're up to number 4. Duke, number 5. Yale, number 6. They had a nice bounce back win after losing a midweek game in overtime to Bucknell, 9-8 in overtime. Syracuse, number 7. Rutgers, number 8. Cornell, number 9.
Hmm.
Somewhat untested Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what we'll see what they're made of soon.
Mm-hmm.
And Loyola is number 10. Give me your top 10 now, Dix.
Maryland, Albany, Denver, Hopkins.
Okay, all the same. Top 4.
Yep. Duke, Syracuse, which is a little hard because Syracuse beat Duke. But I think Duke, just their overall body of work. You know, the top 10 is interesting. It's all what have you done for me lately. And I'll expand on that in a couple minutes. Duke, Syracuse, Rutgers. And again, putting Rutgers below Syracuse because Rutgers beat Syracuse head-to-head. But, you know, again, Rutgers lost to Johns Hopkins. Syracuse got bulldozed by the Blue Jays. So Maryland, Albany, Denver, Hopkins, Duke, Syracuse, Rutgers. I've got Yale at 8, which is interesting, again, because then I got Bucknell at 9.
Huh.
I got the Bison in there. That win over Yale midweek up at Reese Stadium is very impressive. So I took the Bison. I'm used to Anish Shroff calling those South Dakota State football games, and it's the Bison, not the Bison. And then I've got Loyola rounding out my top 10. Cornell's right on the outside again, but to your point about them being untested and the fact that they lost head-to-head to Yale 13-11, Bucknell beat Yale. You know, you take all those factors into consideration, and that's why I've got Bucknell in my top 10, and I do not have Cornell in my top 10. You know, again, going back to my conversation yesterday with Ed Lee from the Baltimore Sun, he asked me right now if the tournament started today, would Maryland be the number one seed? And I said, no, they wouldn't. Albany would be the number one seed. When you look at Albany does have the number one RPI, and I think right now they've got the better wins. They've beaten Cornell, which is a good win right now because the Big Red continue to roll. Albany trounced Syracuse, and they own the head-to-head with the University of Maryland. And then you look at Maryland, their RPI is number 2, and some of their wins have lost a little steam over the last week. Villanova, Penn, and Notre Dame. You know, those three games have all lost a lot of steam in terms of value as those teams, you know, have hit some snags. So I think Albany would be the number one overall seed if the NCAA tournament started today. But Maryland is my number one for right now based on what have you done for me lately.
Yeah, so
and you can't ignore that loss to UMBC. You know, that's as that win is for UMBC, that's a bad loss for Albany.
The way the Inside Lacrosse calculates the tournament predictions and the way it's based on some of the NCAA criteria. So we look at top 5 wins.
Yep.
So there's like 3 tiers of wins.
Top 5, top 10, top 20.
Yeah. So it's where they currently are now.
But you guys don't have a listing of RPIs, right? Like hard numbers.
Listing of RPIs.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah,
should know that.
Yeah. Let's move to some listener calls, Dix. We got a couple good ones this week. Our first call.
The lines are heating up.
Is from an anonymous call from a Baltimore number.
Okay.
And let's listen to it.
If Rutgers can blow that whistle, Hopkins can bring back the cannon.
So this guy got right to the point. He wants to know, why is Rutgers allowed to play that train whistle? After
it is not a train whistle, man. That is a train horn. It is awesome. Okay. It's actually really cool. I was watching a little bit of that Rutgers-Michigan game with my wife, and Rutgers was scoring and scoring and scoring, and he got that, and it's not even that, you know, I'm not doing it justice. And I said to her, I was like, that's cool. Like, I love hearing that horn. And as a broadcaster, sometimes when you're not ready for it and they hit it, it can almost like scare you a little bit, startle you a little bit.
But it's like played out of their PA system, right?
It is. It is a recorded noise. And the caller is referring to a cannon that used to be fired at
Johns
Hopkins.
Yeah, so this had to be a while ago because I don't ever
remember. So I did a little
hearing about this.
So I just pulled a Google up after listening to the call, and this comes from Johns Hopkins Magazine, I believe, from years ago. During the 1950s and 60s and into the 70s, it was a Hopkins tradition to bring a cannon to all home games. The device was a small but functional black cast iron cannon about knee high. A couple of members of the Booster Club, would set up the cannon directly behind the opposing team's goalie and as close to the end line as the refs would allow. When the team switched goals at the end of the quarter, the cannon was hastily wheeled across the field to follow the opposition's goalie. The cannon was charged with a generous supply of black powder, and each time Hopkins scored a goal, a string was pulled and the cannon aimed directly at the opposing goalie went off with a very loud bang and a puff of smoke. Needless to say, this would be quite distracting, if not intimidating, to some opposing goalies. I think I just answered the question as to why there's no cannon at Hopkins.
Well, you know, bringing a cannon into a stadium these days, yeah, probably frowned upon. But it's a home game, and it's yours. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good point, though. There could be a...
There could be a pre-recorded cannon sound, sure, a boom sound, like the horn at... Or the horn at Rutgers at High Point Solution Stadium is recorded. You could have a recording, but you can't have an actual cannon, let alone behind the opposition's goalie going off.
Yeah.
And it does say in the last paragraph of this piece, over the years, opposing coaches began to protest, and eventually the NCAA Rules Committee prohibited such loud noise-making devices so close to the field of play. The rule was generally written, but everybody knew it was specifically directed toward the Hopkins lacrosse team. So, or the Hopkins lacrosse cannon. So, yeah, again, you can't have a physical device. And it is an NCAA rule. You can't have, like, a physical device.
But it's also, you know, sometimes traditions die.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, I never heard of this. So it's at least 40 or 50 years since it's been, 60 years since it's been in a practice. What was the dates on that?
In the 70s. It was outlawed in the 70s.
So we're looking approaching at least 40 years.
40, 50 years, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's one you want to bring back or you could bring back, or if it would have any meaning to the current fan base, or you know, the fan base in general. Like,
I think it would probably scare the hell out of the crowd, and it's, you know, and you know, and it's, yeah.
I mean, they talk about, maybe it would be more appropriate if just an ambulance siren went off at Homewood Field,
like
the natural environment.
Taz's entrance music, the Professor Wrestler Taz. I don't know if you ever heard his.
Well, Hopkins is it's a medical.
That's
it's
true.
It's known as a medical school. There's quite a few.
Well, you don't even need, you know, artificial ambulance. Right.
That's what I mean.
Noises. They go by, you know, on the regular.
But just make them. You have to stop and wait till we score a goal.
It'd be like the movie Slapshot, where Paul Newman paid the ambulance to sit out front because he was promising somebody was going to go to the hospital. And the guy's like, you know, I got to get going. He says, I'll just drive around a couple times and turn the siren on, too. Like, get people all riled up. Never mind bringing the cannon back. Let's bring PJ's Pub back.
Yeah, how we about should bring that? PJ's Pub back. That? That's a better Hopkins lacrosse tradition that I would definitely get
there
behind.
There you go.
There you go. All right. Let's give a little shout-out and love to Sideline Swap before we get to our second call.
We have a second call?
Yeah, a second call.
Get out.
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. You can shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off or snag hard-to-find college gear. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com. Sidelineswap.com, or download the iPhone app today. All right, here's our second caller. It's a good hypothetical question that he wants our advice on.
Hey, guys, this is George from Pennsylvania. Big fan, love the show. Got a question for you. I need you to rank these people. From the one that the player or the person that you hate the most to the one that you dislike the least. So we're ranking these from the guy you hate to the guy you don't hate quite so much. The three guys are the attackman, who every time he scores a goal, jumps around and cheers like he just won the national championship after every goal. That guy. Or the player who all he does is whine and complain to the referee. He cries. He tells the ref he missed the slash. A player was in the crease. That whiner or complainer. Or the third guy, the dad who sits in the stands and thinks he knows more about lacrosse than the coaches and the referees combined. And he lets everybody know it. He's yelling and screaming. He's calling for offenses. He's complaining about the defense, and certainly he's complaining about the refs. So those three guys, the attackman that jumps around like a national championship, the whiner on the field, or the dad that just never shuts up. Big fan, love the show. Keep up the good work.
All right, this is a good one.
That's funny.
If you've been to games recently, you
who do you hate? So who do you hate the most and dislike the least?
Because basically, you're going to hate all these guys. So he's saying like your level of hate. So we're going to rank these guy, the guy we hate the most, then the second guy, and then the guy we could, I guess, tolerate the most or hate the least is what George from Pennsylvania is asking. So first is the celebration guy, that attackman. We'll throw a midfielder, any player who just over celebrates every single time as if he, you see this in the NFL a lot. Like a guy, a team might be losing by like four touchdowns and a wide receiver catches his first pass of the game and gets up and does the demonstrative first down move. And you're like, dude, look at the scoreboard.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's, you don't have to celebrate this one
all
that much. You just caught your first pass of the day. So celebration guy. Then second was the whiny player. The kid who's just, or the player who's just always mouthing off and complaining, whining to the referee about every call.
Right.
And third is that know-it-all dad or know-it-all parent who just sits up there and wants to tell everybody what he's doing or just be very vocal in his, not even support of his son or daughter, but just yelling at the referees.
Yeah.
So I'll let you take this one.
And, you're going to let me take this
one? I think I've decided what. What all my right. rank would be. Want me to go first on this?
No, I'll go first.
Because I know you got some good stories.
It is a give and go. So the first would be the person. And I hate.
Oh, no, this isn't the give and go. We have another one for give and
go. Oh, you're right. Okay. Well, this is in the spirit of give and go. Yeah. So hate is a very, very strong word. That's a very strong word. But dislike, the parent. And it doesn't have to be a dad. It could be a mom as well.
Yeah,
it could be a mom as well. And I was watching a JV game last year. And the officials are calling the game, and I thought they were doing a pretty good job, and they were calling things. There just happened to be three calls in a row against the white team, and there was a mom. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What are you looking at? Do you even know the rules? Blah, blah, blah. And then you get the dad who does the,
what year did you graduate? You know, what year did you graduate?
Right. I'll tell you a quick story. Recently, I had a friend of mine call me, and he said after a game, he said a referee threatened a parent. I said, okay, walk me through this. Well, the referees were coming off the field, and a dad told the refs that they were horrible, and they were terrible. And then the one referee said, why don't you come say it to my face or meet me in the parking lot? Okay, both parties are in the wrong. Like, you know, as officials, and I can tell you as an official, I have been in situations leaving a field, leaving a venue, leaving a parking lot where I have been accosted by people and they have said stuff, they've cussed at me and things of that nature. And you drive away or you walk away or you remove yourself from the situation because nothing good is going to come about it. So they were wondering, like, who can we report this referee to? I said, okay, well, let's back up for a second. The way that you do that is you get to the head coach. And then this was at a school. This wasn't a club or anything. This was a school. And I said, you got to notify the head coach. But then ultimately, it's got to go through the athletic director. And the athletic director is going to come back and say, okay, what happened? And then that dad or friends of that dad are going to have to say, well, you know, Dan Flynn said something to the referees as they're walking off the field. Well, why'd you do that? You know, it all started with the parent. You know, you don't have to say anything. Because right then and there, you're in the wrong by, you know, hey, you guys suck, or nice calls today, or, you know, why don't you learn the rules, or something like that. Something flips. So nothing. What I'm trying to say is nothing good is going to come out of the yelling and the carrying on and the screaming and all that other kind of stuff. That is the worst of those three. Second,
I have a story.
Yeah, go ahead.
And my reason for it is, like, I'm looking at this like if I'm a player, what would be the most embarrassing thing, or as another fan at the game, I guess.
Oh, it's uncomfortable.
Is ranking these three people as a fan of the game. I'm going to watch a game, and how annoying would each of these be to me? And the know-it-all dad is the worst.
Yeah.
We had an incident at one of our fall tournaments over at UMBC, our fall invitational, the first weekend in November, where there was a dad who just got into it with the fans of the other team. This is club lacrosse, kind of really just scrimmages, basically.
Yep.
And he...
Even if it wasn't a scrimmage.
Would not stop.
Yeah.
To the point where the other fans of that team left because they didn't want to be sitting next to the guy. And he still was giving it to the other team parents well after the game was over. Mm. We had to go over and say something to him. It didn't stop him. If I was his son, I would have been mortified.
Yeah.
I would have wanted, I would have said, I'll just walk home. I don't want to be around you. You just embarrassed me in front of all my friends' parents, etc. It's the worst. That has got to be the worst.
Yeah, and look, I've had people have been like, oh, you should have listened. You should have heard their fans. They were awful. Well, why'd you sit near them? Well, I was sitting down, and they sat in my section. Okay, well, why didn't you move? You know, similar situation. It's a club situation. You know, why didn't you move? Well, because I was there first. Well, but you know what? Who cares? Like, if it makes you uncomfortable or it gets under your skin or if it's insulting or offensive, just move. Just move yourself. Again, it's remove yourself from the situation. You know, you really don't find trouble unless you go looking for it. But, yeah, it's – and I tell you what, it's really, really difficult to get away with anything these days with people with camera phones and other type of video and recording equipment and things of that nature. It is really, really difficult. You had a situation last year at the Under Armour underclass games where it was caught on film, a parent going after referees. And the parent was verbally abusive, using foul language. And I didn't see what happened in the game. Like, I don't know if they had, quote-unquote, an argument, but – chasing a referee off the field or confronting a referee off the field and dropping F-bombs and name calling and that kind of thing is really inappropriate.
So not all dads are worse.
So there we go.
We agree with that. So okay.
I tell you what, we're lucky. There's more really, really good fans and really positive influences than there are of what we just got done discussing.
No doubt. So it comes down to who is the next worst celebration guy. Or whiny guy.
So I have to go probably with whiny guy because as a referee, look, you face off men especially want to chat me up or chat any official up. Hey, how you doing today, Mr. Dixon? Good to see you. So what do you expect from me today? Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know, and you know, you appreciate that.
Like a catcher.
Yeah.
Like a catcher would work the home plate.
Well, I wouldn't know. I'm not a big, I never really, but I know what you're saying. Right, is that what catchers do?
Yeah,
that
they
try to grease
you ever
up?
See the Sandlot?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I just
sure.
watched it the other day.
Sandlot 2 was on as well.
With,
I didn't even know there was
Hamilton
a second one.
Hamilton Porter, the catcher, just always talking to the batter.
Okay.
Yeah, they worked their
Thurman Merman was in Sandlot 2, the kid from Bad Santa, the little porky blonde hair.
I have not seen Sandlot 2.
You've not? It was good. Yeah. My kids like it a lot. And I liked it, too. I enjoyed it as well. But there are guys, and it's all about taste and tone. It's all about taste and tone. I've had kids come up before and be like, hey, you know, come on, he slashed me right in the neck. And I said, I know, I thought he had your stick. And, you know, no, he got me in the neck. I'm like, okay, you know what? I may have missed it. I'll get you next time. You know, it's players like that that just keep playing and play hard versus the ones that are just, you know, they throw their arms up in the air or they look right at you. And I have a pretty long leash. You know, I'll be like, you know, hey, that's enough, number seven, or something like that. And if they can keep it up, that's when you have a problem. But you always try to talk through it. You always try to, you always try to let them know what kind of game you're calling because you're all out there to work together. And it's my job to make their experience as positive as possible and keep them as safe as possible. So you don't have a whole lot of that, to be perfectly honest with you. You don't have a whole lot of kids on the field that are whiners and complainers and that kind of thing. If you do, one, it speaks to how they're coached. If their coach doesn't say anything to them. I can't tell you how many times. I was doing a college game earlier this year where blue fouled White. White was going to go man up, and the coach of White could sense it. He's like, no fouls, walk away. But sure enough, his defender, you know, got in the face of the kid who fouled him and dropped an F-bomb, and everybody heard it. So now you got a second flag down. You know, and now, instead of being a man up, now they're even strength and they don't have the ball. But that was, you know, the coach was knew it was coming. It was trying to prevent it. You have situations where kids talk all game long or act a certain way all game long. That could be a systemic problem within the team. But again, those kids are few and far between.
So how do you feel about celebration guy?
I don't think that there's. I think celebrations can be fun if they're tasteful and and appropriate, quite honestly. I mean, I'm thinking of like...
Under Armour senior game.
Well, the Under Armour senior, but that's an exception. That's creativity and that's fun. And, you know, the kids are just out there to have a good time. I like all the people that get all up in arms about the kids celebrating at the Under Armour game. Like, that's not what it's about. That's, you know, over the top. Blah, blah. But it's a one-time thing. And is it a little ridiculous? Absolutely. But all prisons are man-made, right? And if they want to go out and behave that way, then they have to live with that. And look at me now. I'm going down that road. Yeah. But it is what it is. I remember I competed against a guy in high school, and it used to drive me nuts. It was a crease attackman. The guy had no ability. He did have a catch-and-shoot ability. I take that back. But he would score goals, and like he'd drop his stick like he got checked or something, and he'd go celebrate with his teammates like without his stick. He'd leave his stick on the ground and like go hug guy. And, you know, I know I was like, I'd be like in the hole playing defense or something. He just wanted to take that stick and just kick it or throw it or something like that. Another quick story. This happened in Vail. Back, I want to say it was in the 90s. There was a college player who, when he scored, would raise his hands above his head. I can't remember if he would drop his stick or after he would lower his hands, he'd drop his stick and then go celebrate with his teammates. And this player was playing in Vail, and I think it may have been a semifinal or a championship game, and his team was whooping the other team, and he did that late in the game. And as he went to pick his stick back up, one of the defensemen from the other team just cracked him right across the wrist. And I think he broke his wrist. So I'm not advocating violence or after the play hits or anything of that nature. But it got to the point where the other team was so fed up with the antics that that they took a chop at him and broke his wrist. So
you're going to go know-it-all dad, celebration guy. Know-it-all dad, whiny player, and celebration guy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna switch those. Again, as a fan, you really notice the celebration guy. And it can be really annoying, especially if it's on the other team.
Yeah.
The whiny player, it's usually somewhat subtle, or it's just some back talk to the ref.
Yeah.
And from the stands or the sidelines, you can't really see that all the time. So I'm going to say that that's probably the least annoying thing to me. And I'll put celebration guys second.
Teams are so well coached that you rarely have either of those two categories. But if you think about celebrations, like a fist pump
I don't mind any of that. I think he means like, you know, the throwing your stick and taking your helmet off and that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, but you know, if it's an overtime game or something, first of all, you should never take your helmet off, overtime or not. Like, keep your helmet on. If you want to throw your stick, yeah, you want to have a celebration. That's fine. I like the NFL. I like the NHL 94 celebrations going on right now. Good. Rutgers did it against Johns Hopkins. I had that game, and then there was one on Sunday night. I can't remember. I think it may have been Penn State's first goal where they scored and they did the NHL like they pretended to. The old Sega Genesis NHL 94 game.
There was some talk yesterday, I think at lunch, someone was mentioning that Justin Gutterding celebrated a goal with the Paulie D.
Paulie, is that from Jersey Shore?
Paulie D from Jersey Shore.
What is that?
Like he did like a fist pump and then he like kicked down the door or something.
You got to be careful because there are mechanisms in place for excessive celebration in college lacrosse where you can get flagged. I remember Stephen Keough from Syracuse used to do the ice sweep.
Yeah,
and he used to get flagged every now and again for it. I thought it was a little much to flag him, so I didn't think it was that much. But that was really big. Maybe 5-6 years ago. When did Keough play at Syracuse? That was even longer ago.
I think about right.
Is that about right? Six, but he would do that years. Little ice sweep. I thought it was pretty cool, but some referees were a little uptight about it.
Great question, George. Thank you, as always, to all of our listeners. We really appreciate you listening. And especially sharing your thoughts with us. If you want to call us and you want to get into the show, the number is 443-595-7020. 443-595-7020. Call in with your rant, comments, questions, hypotheticals. Doesn't matter. If it's good, we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll include it in the show.
Love the calls.
And be sure to leave your name and where you're calling from. That always helps describing it. All right, let's get into our five to watch this week. Several very good top 20 matchups. Starting in the ACC, number 5, Duke at number 12, Virginia. Virginia gets their first ACC win in my lifetime.
I think since the Clinton administration.
Yeah, in my lifetime, I believe.
In your lifetime. It seemed that way, didn't
now,
it?
Now, where do you fall on the fence of? There were some people who said that it's meaningless. This team doesn't care what happened 5 years ago. They're playing great teams. They've had good seasons. whether you win ACC games, lose ACC games, it's not that big of a deal. And then there's some people who are like, this is the end of a streak that was a huge deal, and all the guys on the team felt it and the pressure, and they finally got that monkey off their back.
Like, I know. Sort of yeah. Like what good seasons has UVA had over the last 5 years? Have they? I don't think they've been to the quarterfinals since winning the national championship in 2011, have they?
Right? No, I don't believe so.
No. So where's the great seasons? You know, they've had good seasons. What do you mean they've had good seasons? I don't.
They've made the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, but then they've gotten smoked in the first round.
Well, they're not going.
I know what you're saying. You know, I hear what you're
13
saying.
Or something.
But that's not the standard that is Virginia Cavalier lacrosse. That is not a Virginia standard just to make the NCAA tournament and get bounced in the first round. Virginia lacrosse is, you know, Dom Starcia raised the bar there with select four. He won four. 99-03, 06, and 2011. Four.
Okay.
Tom's got four national titles. Yeah, I think this was a huge deal to Virginia. When you play in a conference, you take a lot of pride playing against conference teams. And I don't think Virginia, you know, liked getting beat every year by
everyone.
North Carolina, Duke, Notre Dame, Syracuse, Maryland when they were there, got their licks in. So yeah, I think
okay.
This,
so you, it is a big deal. Well, they're going for another one this week. Who do you like down in Charlottesville in this game?
It's hard, you know. I think this is going to give Virginia a lot of confidence. Obviously, they got the win over a struggling North Carolina team, but that was the game to get into the ACC tournament, right? That fourth and final spot. So
yeah, UNC's really in jeopardy now.
They're reeling.
They have to play Syracuse this weekend, and if they lose, they will be under 500 for the season.
Right. So with that in mind, I still like Duke. I still think Duke is the best team in the ACC. They've got to demonstrate more consistency, especially on the defensive end. They got a little bit more scoring. Conley got into the scoring column against Notre Dame. I like Duke in this game.
Number four, Johns Hopkins at number 14, Penn State, 2 p.m. on ESPNU in a Big Ten game.
Oh, on Saturday, right?
Yes, yeah, Saturday.
Yeah, so Hopkins, all of a sudden, is struggling a little bit at the faceoff dot. And Gerard Arcari's health is in question right now. So
that may help Hopkins.
May help Hopkins. But you never know. You know, shoot. Jake Glatz is an accomplished faceoff man. He's only a freshman. Hasn't taken a ton of reps this year. Struggled when he got into the game this past Sunday night. But you know, now he's got a week of preparation. And if he is the guy to go, then he's going to be taking on a fellow Boys Latin alum in Hunter Moreland. So battle of BL at the faceoff dot in State College. Hopkins offensively right now, I really like the way that they're playing. I like the way they're shooting the ball. Penn State, I love their motion and the way that they distribute and get balanced scoring. So these are two very similar offenses, I think, at the end of the day. Hopkins might do a little bit more dodging out of the midfield. Defense, this is going to come down to defense. Who can play better team defense? Who can get more saves and better goaltending? And that'll determine the winner.
How good is Penn State? They're 7-4, but they haven't beaten a team with a winning record.
I think they're, I mean, you saw the game on Sunday. Yeah. They went toe-to-toe with Maryland. Yeah. I think they're very, very good. I think they're tough. I think they're athletic. I think they can play fast. And I think they're a very, very good lacrosse team.
All right, well, we'll find out on Saturday. I'm looking forward to that one for sure. Next game, number 9, Cornell, and number 19, Lehigh. 2:30 p.m. CBS Sports Network.
Big out of conference game, and the winner banks that chip. And weird to see out of conference lacrosse happening at this stage of the season. But you know, Lehigh got smacked around a little bit by Loyola, and a dynamic attackman by the name of Pat Spencer carved him up for 7 points. Now they got to try to match up with Jeff Teat. Lehigh's got to figure out a way to win faceoffs. That's something that Loyola smoked them in that category. So. Nice chip to the winner of this game for a quality out-of-conference victory.
Navy at Army in a big rivalry game. Noon,
Star
CBS
game.
Sports Network. Yeah, so Navy is sitting pretty. They are the leader
one loss
right now at 6-1 in the Patriot League with just Army to play. This could be a huge win for them, really set them up for the number one seed in the Patriot League tournament. And Army needs it. I mean, this is
must
one
win.
Of those games
yeah.
where it doesn't matter what the team's record is going into it. This is the old Day of Rivals special, one of the two best rivalries in all of lacrosse.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. Always is. A lot of emotion, a lot of physical play, and so much pride between these two service academies. Must win for Army, and I'm sure they're going to approach it that way. They just don't have a quarterback on offense that can really control their offense and set the tone and set other guys up. Navy does have that, and it's great. It's going to be a great game. I hope they get good weather. They should. I think temperatures, at least in this area on Friday, are looking at like high 70s.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful this weekend.
Yeah. So I think that should be that'll be a great setting for that rivalry.
The fifth game, number 8 Rutgers at number 1 Maryland, Sunday night, 7:00 BTN.
Sunday night lacrosse. We got you on the Big Ten Network. It'll be me and Pete Medhurst this week. Joe B's got hockey assignments as the Caps made the playoffs again. Can't wait for this one. Rutgers has not beaten Maryland since 1980. Last time these two teams tangled was triple overtime victory for the Scarlet Knights. I'm sorry, triple overtime loss for the Scarlet Knights last year, Easter Sunday, 2017. Connor Kelly with the game winner. There's a Rutgers team that's hungry with a lot to prove. They typically don't play Maryland as competitively away from High Point Solution Stadium, so they're going to have to figure out a way to compete at College Park. And they also lost to him in the Big Ten championship game at Johns Hopkins in 2016. That was a game that was dominated by Maryland. So, the Scarlet Knights have to figure this out. They've got the seniors. Their leadership is going to have to bubble up this week and really show them the way against a Maryland team that's incredibly difficult to beat at home. Obviously, we saw them lose to Albany back in March. But this is going to be another – we're gearing up for another terrific Sunday night of lacrosse on the Big Ten Network. Another game to look out for, 11 a.m. on Saturday. It's Ohio State versus Michigan. I'll have that call out in Columbus with Mike Monaco, and it's before the Ohio State spring football game. Both these teams are struggling right now big time. Loser, I think they're done. Everybody says you got to get to 3. The magic number is 3 in the Big Ten Conference to have a chance at the Big Ten Conference tournament. So, obviously the loser goes to 0-3 in the conference and probably has no chance of making the Big Ten tournament.
All right, it's time for our give and go and wrap this thing up. This is the week of the goalies. This is what I'm calling it.
How so?
Well, Megan Clothier on our staff, works in our events team. She's been doing a lot of editorial work too, helping out Hallie with our women's coverage on Isle Women.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a goalie in college, played at Temple. We always chat about how we watch highlight films and goalies are always getting torched. And she did a write-up this weekend on IsleWomen.com, where wrapping up the weekend, but she signed off by having a couple paragraphs about how great the goalie play was this past weekend in women's lacrosse and really calling out a couple of particular standouts. And then I happen to see on Twitter a friend of the pod, Tim McGeaney, who's at @in_the_crease on Twitter.
Play goalie at Loyola?
Yeah. Was in a discussion about the greatest goalies of all time. And I thought, let's make this the week of the goalie for the guys who don't get a lot of love.
So greatest goalies of all time is the
game to go. So McGeaney's comment was, it depends on the level, college or pro or international. Let's keep it at college.
College? Okay, right. Yeah, because you could go in a lot of different directions with those other two, the international game as well as the MLL, Major League Lacrosse.
It's tough to quantify something like that in some regards, but I'll just list a couple of guys, three guys that I've seen since I've really been a fan of lacrosse since
last 3 years.
late 80s.
Go ahead.
Again, I grew up in Delaware. Didn't really see lacrosse a whole lot until I got to Hopkins.
But you did not grow up 90s. In Little Italy like your mom.
No, I grew up in the mean streets of Newark.
That's why you're so soft.
Yeah. It's all that great cooking that I got at home that I shared with my 4 other brothers and my sister.
Oh, wow.
We had to fight over a single pan of lasagna, all 8 of us. So it would be, I missed the Mike Federico, Larry Quinn era at Hopkins. A lot of people think Larry is one of the best goalies. He's one of our friends. I know you're real close with him. One of the best goalies ever. So I'd love to include him, but I don't think I've ever really seen him play other than maybe like a Hopkins alumni game or something like that.
And he didn't impress you enough in the alumni game to sway your vote?
He still had the big baggy sweats on that he was famous for.
So he never wore big baggy sweats. Larry wore like tight fitting slacks.
That's what I meant.
They were like those skin tight black, and he used to
put the shorts over top of them.
No, he never did that that I know of. But he used to
80s gym look.
He used to like zip like instead of zipping down the sides were zipped up to show off his amazing calf muscles. God, that guy was built like a pipe cleaner back in the day.
All right, so I'm going to say the three that really stand out to me. Scott Bacigalupo.
It's Bacigalupo. Not Bacigalupo. It's Bacigalupo.
Bacigalupo. Princeton goalie who was a three-time winner. He was a three-time winner of the Kelly Award for the outstanding goalie in Division I lacrosse, mm-hmm. which kind of goes to the first-team All-American goalie every year. Can you remember an occasion when the first-team All-American goalie did not win the Kelly Award?
I'd have to go back and look. That's tough to remember. But no, that typically happens. The first team All-American
goalie. Yeah, almost all the time. So I looked it up. He's the only three-time winner other than Jim Kapler, who won it from 55 to 57. He won it three times. He's a Maryland goalie. So Bacigalupo, only three-time winner other than Jim Kapler.
Okay.
Brian Dougherty won it two times after him in 95 and 96 for Maryland. Was outstanding. Also great in the pro game, international level too.
But you can't count those.
I'm not. I'm just saying that that might be how some people know him. And then I'm going to go with John Galloway, Syracuse goalie.
Yeah, he's good.
Won it twice in 2010 and 2011, was the outstanding goalie. In recent times, one of the few back-to-back winners. I'm looking at this list since Mickey Jarbo won it back-to-back in 1999 and 2000. John Galloway is the only multiple winner. Mm-hmm. And he won it twice. So I'm going to go with Bacigalupo, Dougherty, and Galloway of the recent best goalies that we've seen in our time.
Yeah,
how about you?
So goalies these days, it's hard because the stick technology and the size of the athletes and the time spent on shooting coaches, shooting gurus, shooting clinics, everything. So the goalie position has changed a lot.
Didn't you used to be allowed to have more poles on the field? Like in the 80s?
Yeah, I think you could have five, maybe. Right. And then Syracuse had like that hybrid. I think it was, I forget the guy. It may have been Steve Scaramuzzimo, but I can't remember or not. But he had like a 53-inch or 50.
So there was a time when offensive player sticks weren't as good, and you could put an extra long pole on the field too. Yeah. So it was harder to score, I guess.
Yeah, so for me, number one and turn the doorknob, it's Larry Quinn. I did see Larry play when I was younger, and then I've seen tons of film on him as well. Two-year starter, 84 and 85. Two-time national champion, two-time first-team All-American. I believe in 85, if not 84 as well, he's also the national player of the year.
He was the national player of the year twice.
So it doesn't get much better than that. And
I want to know why he didn't start before his junior year.
I'm sure he would tell you the story if you asked. But the save he made in the 84 championship game at Delaware, where he went post to post. And mind you, Larry's 6'3".
He's a tall guy.
He's a tall dude, so he's a really, really tall netminder, but just efficient, outlet passes, soft and buttery, just would put it into a space where his guys could get to it. Great communicator.
Yeah, I bet he was a great communicator.
To me, he's the best of all time. When you have that track record kind of thing. I played against Batch. I played against Scott Bacigalupo in both high school and college. Tremendous goalie.
Where did he go, to St. Paul's?
He went to St. Paul's. St. Paul's guy. And great goalie. Great goalie. But, it's hard for me to separate the personal from the accomplishments because 94 quarterfinals up at Princeton, they beat us. And that ended, my career, my teammates, my classmates' career, and we really thought we should have won that game. Like, we had opportunities to win that game. Batch is a fantastic goalie. He's incredible, and I had a tough time scoring on him, particularly in high school. I had a lot more chances of scoring him in high school and did a few times, but he made a lot of saves on me as well. So I'm with you with Batch being a great goalie. Dougherty as well. Everybody goes back to that 95 semifinal, the first quarter that he had against Johns Hopkins, but that's not the only piece of work in his body of work. He is tremendous and a great goalie. I could go to now. Tillman Johnson's a hard one because I don't think there was ever a more dominant performance in an NCAA championship weekend than 2003 Tillman Johnson, the effort that he put in against Maryland, and then the championship game they had against Johns Hopkins was just ridiculous, the saves that he made. Now, detractors will say the field on that Monday was completely shot. It was basically like playing in marshland. That was the natural grass surface at then PSINet Stadium, which is now M&T Bank Stadium, the home of the Baltimore Ravens. So really, you couldn't bounce shots. You couldn't, you know, you couldn't do a whole lot on the ground in that game. But Tillman Johnson was ridiculous in that contest. Along those lines, you could point to Jesse Schwartzman for Johns Hopkins.
He was great in the biggest games.
He was great in big games, the 2005 and 2007 national championship games in particular. Now, his regular seasons, there were times where he would get yanked and pulled, and I think Mike Gavazdin was his backup and would get time and play.
Do you know who the 2005 and 2007 Kelly Award winners were?
And that is, hold on, and that's for goalies, right?
Goalies.
Man, hold on, let me think.
2005.
Let me think, hold on.
They're not household names. I'll just say that.
Give me a hint.
Duke goalie in 2005.
Oh, that's, oh my God, that's not Joe Kermser.
Aaron Fenton.
Oh my God, I would never have gotten that.
Yeah. And in 2007.
Kermser was the late 90s, yeah, 97.
Cornell in 2007.
Oh, Hewitt. No, Hewitt was Princeton.
Princeton in 2006.
That's okay. What was that guy's name? Not Sinar? No.
Matt McMonagle.
McMonagle. I remember McMonagle. Okay. Wow. Good goalies.
First team All-Americans. So I'm just looking at this list. So since Quint won the award and was first team in 88 and 89, Quint Kesenick at Johns Hopkins, Hopkins has two goalies who won the Kelly Award, were first team All-American in that entire period of time. Can you name them?
It was Nick Murtha.
Yeah, Nick Murtha in 2002.
Yeah, and one more? Or is that it?
One more.
Nick Murtha and not Rob Scher. Rob Scher?
No, Rob Scher didn't get it.
Rob Scher didn't get it. I know Murtha. Murtha had a great year that year. Murtha was a really good goalie.
When I tell you who it is, you're going to be like, oh, of course. 1998 is the year.
Kark. Yeah, Kark, Brian, yeah, yeah. Brian, oh, God, how could I forget Brian?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought when I told you who it was.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was, Brian was fantastic. You know,
he
great,
was the first goalie that I remember seeing a lot of, where he would, really good taking the ball out,
yeah,
down the field by himself.
Yeah, great athlete.
Like Brett Queener was a guy who sort of brought it like in the inside
next
lacrosse,
yeah,
era.
Yeah.
Where,
well, he also played extra man offense.
It was on
short
TV
stick
a little bit, yeah, more and stuff. Yeah. But Carcaterra was the first one I remember seeing. It was really like mobile and out of the goal.
He was great. He was great. Exciting. Exciting and unpredictable. He made the game fun. But I'm going to go. So I'm going to go Larry Quinn. I'll go John Galloway as well.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Still got it, too.
I saw him for the first time in my first Under Armour All-America game back in 2007. I remember it because it was a lot of star power in that game. Steele Stanwyck was in that game. The Bratton brothers were in that game. A lot of really, really good players in that. I know I'm forgetting a bunch. But Galloway was obviously North, but he played for the South because he needed a goalie, and he didn't bat an eye. And, you know, he's an excellent, excellent goalie, and a big reason why Syracuse won two national championships.
Back to back.
While he was there.
Sophomore, junior years, I think.
Another goalie that I remember, and look, this, I think it might have been just one season, but I can't remember, was Matt Russell at Navy. 2004, he had just a ridiculous year, and that was a really, it was probably the best Navy team of the last 25 years. Probably even more. Yeah, it's got to be more because they went to the national championship game and almost beat Syracuse. But Matt Russell that season was fantastic. He was a difference maker for them. They had Mitch Hendler on defense and Graham Gill in the midfield and Bersner, Bossy, Dingman, the big man,
oh, yeah.
Ian Dingman, the middie. But Russell, and when he separated his shoulder in the national championship game and tried to play through it, and that just speaks to his toughness. Matt Russell's a pretty special goalie as well. If you need me to name three, I'll go Larry Quinn, John Galloway. I'll go Batch. I'll go Batch Galupo as well. That's you know, three times winning that award, and he won two national championships during that time.
Yeah.
And he's one of the guys. that got Princeton on the map in terms of lacrosse. That's no small accomplishment either. So that those will be my three.
All right. If you like what you heard, and if you've gotten this far, we know you do, please subscribe, leave a rating on iTunes or however you listen to this, and share it with a friend. That's all we ask. Just share it with a friend. You can reach out to us on Twitter at Dixon Lacrosse or at @D_Fly, or you can reach me at email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Also, don't forget, call in with your rants, comments, questions, thoughts, ideas, hypotheticals to 443-595-7020. 443-595-7020. Be sure to leave your name, where you're calling from. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts. We drop a new one every day during the season. Have a great week and enjoy the games.
Interesting man.
He's good.
He's okay.